Going to check in, though, early with a newsmaker out of the gate a little bit earlier than later, and he's a busy person these days. Crossover day, he'll tell you what that means. Senate President Jeb Bradley, Republican Senate President, joining us out of gate this morning. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm glad you survived the path to totality on Monday. Senator, crossover day, what's cooking at the under the Gold Dome?
So, the House Senate, a whole array of bills on education funding, on marijuana. We'll take them up, have public hearings on them, obviously, and get them due consideration. I think the big debate that we had yesterday was an abortion-related bill. Our Democratic friends have wanted to remove a Senate that said in the 24-week bill that we passed a couple of years ago that nothing creates a right for an abortion. Well, we removed that Senate, but replaced it with what 46 other states do, which is collect some, basic information about abortion. Just how many are being performed. And obviously they're all confidential, and our Democratic colleagues, had a real tough time with that, but it passed 14-9 on its way to the House.
Senator, are they going to refer to that as the Bradley abortion ban?
Yeah, well, I don't think they can, because they got what they wanted, and then they voted against it, and then one of them called it a dystopian horror show. And the reality is, even on Planned Parenthood's website, they say abortion is safe and legal, up until 24 weeks. And, the public is very supportive of, our efforts to ban late-term abortion right up until the moment of birth. So I don't know why they call it a dystopian horror show, because Planned Parenthood would disagree with that.
Senator, you mentioned the marijuana bill coming to the Senate. Governor Sununu was on the show last week, I think. He said he would not support the version as it came out of the House. Is the Senate going to change the marijuana legalization bill a lot? And do you think it's something, I think you're opposed to it, is it something that has a chance of getting by the Senate? Or is it, as it's coming in, already dead on arrival?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's dead on arrival. I remain opposed, because I think increasingly the health risks, especially to people that are adolescents or even in their 20s, I think have been increasingly clear that there are health risks. And that's why I remain opposed to it. I'm okay with medical marijuana, okay with, decriminalizing it so people don't have, misdemeanor or felony records. But I think in terms of recreational marijuana, there are some very significant issues with it, especially in the middle of a, fentanyl crisis, we still have in, our state. So, will it pass with changes to make it more in line with what, Governor Sununu said he could live with? Maybe. I think we'll have to see what happens. My goal is to make sure, if it's going to pass, that it be done in the best way possible for New Hampshire in terms of public safety, THC content of the marijuana. So basically listening to, law enforcement and, some of their very real concerns. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a debate, that's for sure.
And, Senator, before we let you go, I know you're on the road to Concord. I appreciate it. Jeb Bradley, Senate President, New Hampshire, joining us live, regular contributor. I want to just ask you, finally, I've talked a lot on the show. I think I've referenced it with you as, these stories we hear in New England, around the country, of squatters, people who move into homes, take over, have no right being there, and then the lawful homeowner has to go to civil court to prove it's their home to get the people that have no rights out of their home. Florida recently passed an anti-squatting piece of legislation. Is that something possible we could see in New Hampshire, so that's spelled out what the rules are or not?
I think it's very probable. We're trying to, you know, I've got our attorney researching how to write it so that it's the most effective way possible, but it's totally inexcusable that a homeowner could, come to their property and see that somebody has moved in and they're out of luck. And, you know, we have a lot of people in New Hampshire that maybe they're not New Hampshire residents, but they're New Hampshire property owners.
Right.
They, you know, have second homes, or they may be residents and they go to Florida in the winter and they're gone for, you know, a period of time.
In
any case.
Or ski homes in the North Country that they may rent occasionally, but might be vacant for a month at a time. Senator, go out your drive safely. Thank you for making some news. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of the Nation. Thank you, Senator Jeb Bradley.
Take care, Jack. Have a good week.
John Decker, our own White House correspondent. Of course, he's a member of the bar, an attorney, and one of the few in the press corps. And O.J. Simpson explained, and we talked yesterday a lot on the show on his passing, just the incredible up-and-down, surreal career of O.J. Simpson. Take it away, John.
Well, surreal is right. I'm one of those thousands of young people all across America who had a poster of O.J. Simpson up on their wall growing up, not because I was a Buffalo Bills fan, but because I was a fan of O.J. Simpson. He really transcended so many people's lives in terms of sports, his athletic exploits, not only in college at USC, but in the NFL, and then post-NFL, as a broadcaster, as a pitchman, as an actor. And I had an opportunity to meet O.J. Simpson many years before he was accused of those double murders in New York City on the set of the NFL pregame show that O.J. Simpson was a part of with Bob Costas at NBC. Couldn't have been nicer. And then many years later, I actually covered the O.J. Simpson trial. And that was surreal, given, you know, the place that O.J. Simpson held in our minds all across America. Really a remarkable life, lots of ups and downs, but it's a conflicted life, you know, given what he was accused of and what he was found liable for. That's the libel for the deaths of both Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman a few years after that criminal trial took place.
And, you know, it's ironic, John, the only time he went to jail was over that hotel break-in room over the memorabilia.
Well, that's right. He spent 9 years in jail in Nevada for that incident. And so that's another thing that O.J. Simpson's life held in terms of experiences. But a remarkable first half of his life.
Oh, yeah.
And the second half of his life, you know, obviously not so remarkable. You know, people are conflicted. You know, I think that for many people, the idea of meeting O.J. Simpson after 1994, 1995, I think for many people, they wouldn't know whether or not to extend their hand to shake hands with O.J. Simpson because of the conflicted way people felt about him.
Yeah, and you know, you're maybe too young to remember, but he basically put Hertz on the map with that ad in the airport, you know, hurtling over the chairs and amazing. Hey, before I let you go, John, just real quick, it's not on our talking points, but that FISA vote today later in the House, FBI Director Intelligence saying they need to continue it. There's some resistance. Any prediction on where this goes?
Yeah, I do believe it will pass. I do believe that the agreement that has been reached is that FISA will be extended for another 2 years with the idea that for many Republicans in deciding to go with this compromise that Donald Trump, they believe, will be elected president in November. And in 2 years' time, Donald Trump may have a different view about whether or not to extend that law.
All right, hey, well, happy Friday. Senator Lou D'Alessandro, leading Democrat in the state Senate. We just had your colleague, Jeb Bradley, driving to the State House on Republican Senate President. Good morning, Senator Lou.
Good morning, Jack, on this rainy, rainy day. And the Jebster called me this morning also. It's always nice to hear his voice as he negotiates the politics of the Senate.
Well, you know,
not an easy job.
When I asked him what's going on, he mentioned the marijuana bill coming over. He mentioned a few things, but what he said yesterday was a fiery debate on this on an issue that I think 40 other states already collect stats when it comes to some abortion stuff. But all the abortion stuff getting pretty partisan along party lines. Talk about yesterday.
Absolutely, party line. Listen, 14 to 10 votes are coming. they've been closed for a number of years now. When the Democrats were in power, 14 to 10, when the Republicans were in power, 14 to 10, I think the partisanship that's manifested itself every place is really a terrible situation, Jack, a terrible situation. We can't get along the table. One of my bills yesterday, which really drove me bananas, it was a ticket bill to protect consumers who are looking to get tickets to venues, you know, to concerts and so forth and so on. Unbelievable tabling of the bill. We went through three consecutive sessions where we special ordered the bill to get it just right, and then out of the blue, it gets tabled. Nonsense, absolute nonsense. But that's been the way of this of the legislature this session and previous sessions. It's very discouraging to me, having been around for a long period of time, that we can't get along, we can't get things done. And these things are going to fester forever, Jack, because the climate in our country is so polarized, and that polarization has hit New Hampshire, and I never thought it would be as intense, but it is. I think it's highly problematic, Jack, and I'm waiting for April revenues, which are really going to tell a tale. I'm very, very concerned about that, so add that to the mix.
Well, I hear your frustration. The other thing, Senator Lou, is it seems that the national issues are front and center locally, whether it's on sanctuary cities, the border, immigration, abortion rights, all the national stuff seems to be spilling over into the statehouse.
You're exactly right. And what about our local issues? What about the mental health centers? We know that they need help. What about the situation at Hampstead Hospital that we have to deal with? All of these things are present and must be dealt with, but they're overshadowed by the national issues, which become pervasive. And then that's all we talk about. What about the nitty gritty of running our state, managing our state, managing the departments within our state, taking care of the state business? I see trouble in the horizon, Jack. I truly do. We're talking about things today that we talked about 50 years ago, and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
That's not a very good sign, I don't think.
Well, again, I tend to approach, and I've talked a lot on the show about the days of Junie Blaisdell, Ralph Huff. You and Senator Bradley have a good relationship, respectful. You're one of the few that will say something across the aisle. But I just think that nationally, people are just so dug in on a perspective, whether it's talking about energy, whether it's talking about immigration, whether it's talking about this or that, you know, the deficit, the debt. And, you know, too often you'll just hear someone, no disrespect, I'm just going to say this, on your side of the aisle,
right,
they'll just, every time you say something rationally and ask a question, whether it's about the debt, can they cut anything, they'll just go, well, Trump, Trump, Trump. And then if you go to the Trump side, it's Biden, Biden, Biden. It's just never any common ground, common sense.
Right, I agree with you. And it's terrible the way we talk about one another. I mean, it's terrible. I just get, again, it's hard for me to accept this nonsense. I've been working at this business most of my adult life.
Oh, you have?
And the chaos, and the chaos of today means we haven't accomplished much, and that's very discouraging. And I do remember days when we got along, when Jim O'Neill was Speaker of the House and Kimonzakis was Majority Leader. And even though we went through difficult times, we did get along and we got things done. Not the case today, I can say that definitively.
No, everyone's dug in, and you've done it for a long time, and it's not for the money, as they say. Senator, what you going on a rainy Friday? Any final thoughts?
Hey, Jack, let's just hope for the best, right? Well, hope springs eternal. Let's hope for the best. Let's hope we can make things better and that things improve. And we pay attention to one another. And we care about one another. I think that's the really big, big issue. Let's do that. Stay happy, stay healthy, Jack. Keep the dream alive and well, and have a great, great, great American day. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lou. Live, Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse Nation. I know what I did late yesterday afternoon. I know what I'm doing this afternoon, tomorrow, and all day Sunday, and that's watch the Masters, a tradition like none other. John Jefferies live from Augusta, Georgia, day two, as they finish up some, including Tiger, day one, from the Masters. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, Tiger, you know, the guy moves the needle, regardless of where he's at on the leaderboard. Of course, the networks and everybody want him to continue on the weekend, and it looks like he probably will at this stage, but he did have a couple of bogeys in his round that he just now wrapped up, as a matter of fact. He shot two over on that backside, a total of three bogeys for the entire round. So right now, he went from, you know, minus one to now he's plus one. However, the top 50 in ties will make the weekend. And if that's the case for Tiger, he'll have the record for the most consecutive cuts made. Right now he is tied at 23 with Gary Player and Fred Couples. And so, you know, he has a chance to add that to his mantle. But he's got a lot of golf ahead of him. And you know, watching his body language isn't the greatest, although he is striking the ball really well.
Well, you know, John, I'm going to stay with Tiger for a moment because he is just so wonderful to watch. The point that I would make, too, is you look at the last several tournaments in Texas and Florida this season, Tiger hasn't played. And to come out, even though he does that course well, the Masters, in day one, pretty much be about even, even if he's won over, and have that round. And he hasn't been out there with Scottie Scheffler. He hasn't been out there with a lot of these players in the last several weeks. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, no, he's only played 28 holes, believe it or not, Jack, in competition. You know, other than, you know, having to withdraw because of issues with his ankle that was fused and his back. And I think that that ankle and back is going to act up for him a little bit. I mean, he's going to have to play a lot of golf today. He had, 23 holes total that he's going to have to play today. Matter of fact, 27 players had to finish their rounds today, which is going to kind of make it tough on them. But Bryson DeChambeau is the talk. You know, the guy, I tell you what, Jack, I think he's playing much more disciplined golf. He's not just walking up there, you know, on the tee box and trying to whack it 380, 400 yards.
Yeah.
Playing a lot more discipline. He right now has a one-shot lead over Scottie Scheffler, who's just Mr. Amazing. He's talking about Tiger. I mean, his stats as of late are almost Tiger-esque.
When Scottie Scheffler's on and he's had some good, you know, good goes this season. You know, real quickly, John, if you have a moment, because I love this personally. This is my weekend, John Jeffries. I also want to ask you some personal questions, just on you, you know, how many Masters you've been to. But DeChambeau is interesting because some of the LIV golfers like Dustin Johnson, even though the PGA and LIV have technically merged, no one, including Rory McIlroy, and he's someone to talk about, know what that means. But so we don't see DeChambeau in some of these tournaments. All of a sudden, he comes into the Masters day one and shot what, a 65?
Yes, sir. 65, 7 under. Yep. He had one bogey on his card yesterday. Other than that, you know, birdies and the rest of it was clean. But Scheffler, what's amazing to me watching him is, and I don't know if you're an avid golfer or not, but I am, and his footwork is just atrocious.
Yes.
I really don't know how he drives the ball so accurately. I mean, Jack, he's 86-87% of the fairways. It's amazing.
And you know what? That's fairly recent because we actually have a New Hampshire connection connotation with Scheffler. A golf club in New England years ago, a buddy of mine owns it, and Craig Benson, they actually hosted that early PGA amateur when Scottie Scheffler comes in and did well, and everyone's like, who's this kid? You're right, he's moving all around the tee box when he hits the ball. And I mean, typically when a golfer does that, they walk over the club quickly, and that it's way left or right, and he's hitting great shots. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, you know, he has superior athleticism, has to be able to pull that off. But Max Homa, getting back to the actual round today, Jack, he wrapped up his round with a bogey, but he had three birdies on his backside when he picked up at hole number 13 this morning. Another guy to keep an eye on. I mean, we've got a really good leaderboard shaping up.
Yeah.
And if you're an amateur fan, this kid from Ohio State, actually he's from Pittsburgh, but
I saw that.
He's a golfer on Ohio State's team. Neil Shipley, the amateur, is 2 under. He already has 2 birdies on his card this morning for his second round.
I saw him yesterday. I go, wow. And, you know, the other thing real quickly, John Jeffries live from Augusta. I love this. Appreciate it. How many Masters is this for you?
Well, you know what? The Masters is a tough credential to get.
Yeah.
I would say, Jack, it is tougher to get than a Super Bowl from a media perspective because they're only allowing electronic when I say electronic, I shouldn't say it that way, but the IT type media, you know, the Twitters, the Facebooks, digital's the term I'm looking for.
Right.
Kind of caught me at a loss for words, and that's amazing. But anyway, they're only allowing the digital platforms in for new people now, so it's almost impossible to get in.
Now, where's home to you originally, or where do you live?
Right now, I live in Phoenix. I lived in Atlanta for a number of years.
Okay, so don't tell me how many couple hundred days of golf a year in Phoenix. Hey, real quickly, before I let you go, John, Tiger, before the tournament, was doing an interview with one of the Golf Channel folks. I haven't been there. It's one of my things I'd love to do. And I, you know, it's funny, I didn't even want to go on a plane. I want to go on a practice day. I want to go there early and walk. But Tiger was talking because how little he's played this year. And he was saying that people don't realize on TV that from where they were sitting during the interview to the clubhouse, he goes, we're on a hill. We're on a mountain.
Yep.
And the Masters is so hilly. And you'll see sometimes, this is the only course I've seen this, John, and I do love golf, and I play quite a bit, I guess, or not maybe. I like to fish, too, so that affects my golf. But it's one of the few courses where a player can seemingly hit onto the green from, let's just say, 160, 170, or 200 yards out, and hit the ball what I would call perfectly. But if it's 1 foot off, it will hit a shelf, and it will roll, and it will roll. And you don't realize on television just how hilly the Masters is.
Right. Now, you know, television, you're right. It doesn't do it justice. You know, downhill, uphill, side hill, and then you got to contend with the greens. And they didn't have any rain last night. Now, you know, the rain yesterday kind of helped. But what's going to happen today, Jack, is they didn't get any rain, but the winds are going to pick up to perhaps as much as 40 miles an hour in gusts.
Today?
This afternoon. Yes.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, those poor guys going out on the late wave, it's going to be tough, and to be honest with you, I don't really look for anybody to go low this afternoon. I mean, I'd hate to venture a guess, but I would say 7 and 6 under are going to be unheard of for those guys going this afternoon.
I know it's a bad business to be in, but any predictions, John, for Sunday?
Well, you know, my pick is already kind of, well, I shouldn't say tanked, but I took Koepka this year, but he's already 2 over. It's what interesting, I'm glad you brought that up. It's interesting that in the last 18 years, someone in the top 10 after day one has gone on to win. So 18 years in a row. So once play concludes today, well, actually, there's still a handful of guys, I think, out there. Yes, there are, for their first round. But the top 10, keep an eye on that, after their first round, you know, someone in there is going to win it. And I'd like to say of the people in contention right now, Tommy Fleetwood would be hard to overlook. Max Homa would be hard to overlook. I don't think DeChambeau's going to hang on. I don't.
Yeah, but it's hard to get a bet against Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah. I don't know if he'll do it. I think somebody's going to come up and bite him.
Well, that's like a beautiful thing.
Whether it be Fleetwood or Homa.
And then tomorrow's moving day, right? Saturday can change everything.
Yep.
Thank you, John. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. It sounds like you're having a great time. Great report. Thank you.
All right, Jack. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
John Jeffries live from the Masters. I just love saying that. Kevin Landrigan going a little bit later this morning. He's a senior political reporter, New Hampshire Union Leader, one of our senior political reporters in the state and doing this for a long time. Interesting, we had Senators Jeb Bradley on in the first hour, Senate President, Senator Lou D'Alessandro. It's crossover day. It's probably the most frustrated I've heard Senator Lou in a while, Kevin, just how frustrated, how partisan and divided down the middle, or Republicans go one way, Democrats another. They had a heated, I guess, debate yesterday on collecting data on the abortion issue, and 46 other states, I think, collect that data. But anyway, here it's, and they can't seem to agree on much. Kevin, good morning. What are you, crossover day, what are you checking out?
Hey, Jack, good to be with you. Yeah, that was an interesting window into how things are going in Concord. You know, as we've talked about before, in this second year, election year session, it's always more political, it's always more partisan. And I think we got to blame certainly the national politics for some of this, right? You know, I mean, it's the politics in general today, but particularly at the national level, is so toxic and so polarizing. And that's all you're exposed to 24/7. It's very difficult for a state house in any state to push through that, right? And I think New Hampshire's always been pretty good doing that. But it's a big challenge this year. And as I was alluding to, I mean, some of this is the politics. And what I mean by that is that you're looking at a presidential year, which you've talked about many times very well, where who knows what's going to happen in November, right? So if you're leading either party, are you on the cusp of running the table here in November? Or is this going to be, we're going to flip the House and we're going to flip the governor's office? Or, you know, does a Republican have a shot of replacing any Custer? All these things are unknowns. So as a result, you have leadership in both parties basically not wanting to cede to the other side very much, right? So at the State House, for example, in the House, you have House Democrats, 5 out of the last 7 elections, the House has flipped from one party to the other. So if you're in that, if you've got a huge minority like Matt Wilhelm does in the House, are you inclined to help the Speaker of the House get anything done, you know? If the more he gets done, the more likely voters say, you know, my state rep's okay. Things aren't crazy in Concord. Let's go with it. No. So that has a lot to do with why you're hearing the frustration you're hearing. You know, I mean, this abortion reporting thing is a perfect illustration, which is some of this is react, right? Which is, if you're the Republican leadership in the legislature and you've endured for what's going on now, 3-4 years, Democrats pushing abortion rights, abortion ban, abortionness, right, in your face and trying to win elections on abortion.
Yeah.
Then as Republicans in the legislature say, well, wait a minute here. We don't collect stats on abortion. We don't. And why is that? Right. Mm-hmm. Why does Massachusetts collect? Vermont collect?
46, I think 46 other states.
Connecticut collect.
46, you know, 46,
right, 46
other
words,
states.
So what are you, why are we not? And that's what I meant by act, react. I think this mm-hmm. is the Republicans' answer. It's like, oh, okay, you say you support reproductive rights and reproductive freedom and women's access and all that, but you don't want the public to know how many occur. And you don't want the public to know how many late-term abortions are there in New Hampshire? We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And that obviously caused the Democrats to lose their mind in the state Senate yesterday, and you can understand why, because, like I said, Democrats think they have an issue, a wedge issue, and Republicans say, oh, yeah, well, what about this?
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Kevin, you mentioned Ann Custer not running,
yeah,
endorsing Colin Van Ostern since we last spoke. Not surprising. I think that runway is pre-paved for Colin.
Right.
Dr. Vic, a good buddy of ours from the Pulse of an Age, he's in. Louis Tang Williams in. Just talk about, surprised Dr. Vic's running in that second congressional district as a Republican. And the blunt question I'm going to ask you is, regardless of who the nominee is, can a Republican win the second congressional district in this environment?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? I mean, because I just refreshed my memory the other day because I thought this was the case, and sure enough, it's the case. I mean, the late George H. Bush in 1988 was the last Republican running for president who won the second congressional district, right? So, in between a lot of Republican presidents and pretty good Republican candidates, and they lost the second district. So, and sometimes by a fair number. So, there certainly is the challenge there, but it's also a district, you know, Charlie Bass represented for a decade, and Jim Cleveland from New London, moderate Republican, represented for 20 years. And we've changed in New Hampshire, but not that much. You know, so in answer to your question, yeah, a Republican can win. I mean, but they're going to have to thread the needle, right? I mean, one, they're going to have to be able to raise a significant amount of money, or put a boatload of their own into this race. Dr. Vic may be able to do that, and that would help. But also, like I said, you're going to have to, you're probably going to have to run 4-6 points ahead of Trump in your district. Now, that's possible. And the reason why this year, I think Republicans, if I'm a Republican, and I'm not an independent, but if I was, I'd look at this year and I'd say, you know, this is, this could lay up not bad for us. Yeah. And by that, I mean, Kelly Ayotte, Chuck Morris could be the next governor. You're right. If whoever wins that primary. And many times we've seen that office even have more impact on the federal office below it, if you know what I mean, which is, mm-hmm. you know, governors, popular governors have both yeah. saved members of Congress in their own party and hurt yep. members of the other party before. So, you know, if I'm a Republican and thinking about running, this is a good year to run in the second district. It totally is for Republicans, and it's the best shot they're going to get yeah. in at least a decade. So I'm surprised more aren't looking at it, and maybe more will end up looking at it. There's still a lot of time. So, yep. That's going to be yep. a really interesting race.
Let me ask you this before I let you go. Kevin Landrigan, New Hampshire Union Leader, yep. senior political sure. reporter. It may not be high on the who needs to know list because it's probably more personal, but Governor Chris Sununu, obviously not running again. He's still very much involved here and there and doing the national stuff as well. But are you hearing anything on what his plans are definitively next? He's still relatively young. Is it a combination of private sector, business stuff, consulting, business opportunity? Maybe he's going to start a business and national TV news or radio. What are you hearing anything?
No. And I mean, I think all of the above, I think, is out there for him. You know, I think my guess is he really wants a private sector role that keeps him in the game, right? Mm-hmm. Because after this experience and coming from a political family at his young age, I don't think he wants to just walk away and make a bunch of money. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure he wants to make a bunch of money, and I'm sure he'll make a bunch of money when he
but try and keep governor. Try and keep the public visibility
right.
somehow.
And I think that's where. So there's a number of options there, but the reason why we don't know because they do sort of run the gamut, like you said. Do you create a business? Yeah. You create your own business, and it's a public business, meaning it's a business about an issue of the day. You know, where you're trying mm-hmm. to push through, whether it's environmental cleanup or it's you know what I'm saying or do you get involved because he would I mean this is I think about this if you're a trade association or trade group or whatever and you as you know there's or even an ideological group this guy is pretty appealing right
because well look at Charlie Baker in the NCAA
exactly yeah. I mean this guy's a pretty good communicator he manages to stay above the fray. He's popular with the center of both political parties, really. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're an organization and you're looking for a fresh face and somebody who's got a little buzz, you know, I mean, yep. this guy he fits the bill.
Maybe he could be Commerce Secretary if Trump wins in the Trump administration. No, I'm kidding. All right, Kevin, thank you.
All right, have a good weekend.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, joining us now live. Talking about inflation locally. Take it away, Aaron.
Yes, but no, Jack, you are speaking my husband's language with all the master's talk. It's the only thing I've been allowed to be on TV for the past 24 hours, and it will remain that way through the weekend. But in the interim, we'll discuss inflation. We saw it at 3.5% this week, obviously way higher than the Fed's 2% target. It's higher than the month prior at 3.2%. But where you live has a big impact on how much inflation you're experiencing. So the biggest inflation in terms of cities in the U.S., the number one, Honolulu, followed by Miami, Riverside, California, St. Louis, wow.
Wow.
Seattle and Dallas, Texas. Every one of these cities is seeing inflation year over year running above 4%. In Miami and Honolulu, it's at 4.9%, almost 5% inflation. And then the smallest problem in terms of inflation are New York, Denver, Minneapolis, Phoenix, Detroit, and Anchorage. Closest to you guys, Boston, big inflation problem. You guys are in the top 10, all running above 3.5% year over year. This does not bode well long term for the Fed and their potential to cut rates.
It also may not bode well for the incumbent president, who's been running around saying that Bidenomics and the economy are great and the Inflation Reduction Act is working really magically well.
No, it will not. It always comes down. Yeah, you know this, Jack, better than anyone, that many folks go ahead, please. Sorry.
You can't kid people when they're managing household budgets. You can't tell people things are getting better when the third week of every month people are running out of money because everything's so damn expensive. People aren't stupid.
They aren't stupid, and that makes them angry. That's empathy and concern is better than nope, not happening. Don't think about it.
Yeah. All right, Aaron Real, ABC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Rory O'Neill. He's getting ready. He joins us a little bit late because he's been on the phone with his accountant trying to decide if he does an extended filing or on time. Take it away, Rory.
Yeah, it's interesting. The IRS has found that too many people are getting their tax information or tax tips by looking at TikTok videos. Believe it or not. So the IRS had to put out a warning in recent days reminding people don't trust social media posts in order to find out some of the best tax information for you and your family. So there's bad information on social media, but also those bad actors out there who are submitting these bogus ideas about your taxes.
Rory, are you really telling us succinctly in wisdom, don't take tax advice from social media or China?
All right, so get this. The IRS put this information out there, right? They put out this press release. So I called the IRS. I said, hey, can someone in the PR office just do a quick phone interview about this? They dragged and dragged me for days just for a stupid little phone interview on a press release. I get a call yesterday morning at 11:45. Rory, the commissioner of the IRS will call you for an interview in 45 minutes.
Wow.
I had an interview with the commissioner yesterday talking specifically about this and how it's getting out of hand.
Is it really? Now, of course, once you post this, everyone's going to go search, right?
Well, right. So just make sure, we're going to have the interview on my weekend show. I think you carry the weekend dive. And then it's also available on the iHeart app over the weekend dive.
All right, buddy. By the way, Florida's down there with Tennessee, New Hampshire, and Alaska is one of the lower overall tax burden states. So you got that
going. Did you see that survey that measures how much you pay in tax in your lifetime?
No.
Ooh, how much tax do you pay in your life? I can scroll New Hampshire, $722,000. That's the lifetime total tax for people living in New Hampshire, $722,000. Florida's $377,000.
I know. And Rory, before I let you go, it's an interesting. Once in a while, I get these. I'm not a Social Security recipient yet. But I get the statements from Social Security, tell you that you've maxed out already. You can start here. But if you wait, if you wait, by the way, this is what you've paid in. You paid in all this money. You look at the number, you're like, wow. And then they'll say, but if you wait, you can do better if you wait. We don't want you to claim now. All right. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Christina with AARP. And, of course, Christina and the team at AARP do so much tracking information for their members and the public. Christina, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You have some pretty interesting, speaking of tax season, Medicare, Social Security, Medicare, very important to a lot of our listeners. Some important information. Take it away.
All right. So one thing that people may not understand is if they do not sign up for Medicare in a timely way when they turn 65, they could end up incurring penalties that they have to pay for the rest of their lives. So it's really important to understand what those rules are.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the program, who's eligible for it. Why don't we start there?
All right. So Medicare is the health insurance program that almost everyone qualifies for when they turn age 65. And then there are some people who also get Medicare health insurance if they are totally and permanently disabled.
Well, the age, well, elaborate on that a little bit.
All right. So there's a Social Security Disability Insurance Program. So if that's a whole thing. But people who qualify for that program, they eventually get their insurance through Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who are on it, the vast majority of them are there because they are age 65 or older and have been paying into the Medicare system their whole working lives and so qualify for health insurance.
So 65 would be the basic eligibility, simple.
That's right.
Are there some penalties you mentioned earlier, Christina, with AARP that people can face under certain circumstances? Elaborate on that one, please.
Sure. So when the best thing you can do is apply for Medicare benefits within a few months of turning age 65. If you do that, you're going to be golden. If you apply for Social Security benefits sometime around the age you turn 65, they'll automatically enroll you in Medicare, so you're golden. But what you have to keep in mind that if for some reason, like say you're still working and you have health insurance, you don't need to apply for Medicare because you already have health insurance. You need to look into it and make sure that you are not inadvertently setting yourself up for penalties.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head because we've already had three quick messages to me to ask you this. 65, or I'm going to be, but I plan to still work till I'm 67 or 70 full-time. I get my insurance benefit through the employer, and I don't need any other health insurance because, in this case, it's Harvard Pilgrim or Anthem until I'm older. Does that person, should they still sign up for, can you sign up for Medicare at 65 within a month or two to avoid things downstream, penalties, even if you're not going to use it or not? Can you explain that?
Well, I have to say that I would encourage people to go find like reliable information because I'm not an expert. The point that you can apply for Medicare after you stop working, after you stop getting employer-based health insurance. But by trying to prepare for this interview, what I have learned is that it's ridiculously complicated, and so it's really important for people to seek out information so that they know what they're doing, and get the best. End up in the best situation.
One of our listeners, Tim, I don't know if he sounds like a financial expert or planner. He said, Christina's right. You can get penalties. He recommends doing what she said to sign up pretty close to 65. He thinks you have a few months. Even if you're not going to use the insurance, he said you can sign up for it.
Great. So that's good information.
Okay. Interesting. Why do the penalties exist?
So this is just about like how insurance is structured. So if we all apply for, home insurance right after our home burned down and we wanted the insurance company to pay for that, that doesn't work. That's not how insurance works. You pay into it so that when you need it, you can use it. And so the penalties are about that. They don't want you to wait until you need the health insurance to apply for it. And so that's what it's all about. It's just trying to make the system work better and spread the costs across a wide variety of people, so that helps to keep premiums down.
Christina Fitzpatrick with AARP. You mentioned it's complicated. It's very complicated. Where can people go to get more information, Christina?
AARP has a ton of resources, and you can find them at aarp.org/Medicare. And if you scroll down there, you will find a great article that's just like, things you need to know to when you're applying for Medicare and how to avoid common mistakes. Jack, there's one more thing I want to mention. The Attorney General in New Hampshire came out with saying that there's a lot of Medicare fraud going on right now, where the scammers are calling people and saying, hey, did you get a new Medicare card? And you say no. It's like, oh, well, give me your Social Security number and I'll check it out for you. And people should know that that is always a scam. Medicare will not call you. And so just don't fall for it.
It's great advice, Christina, because right now with tax season, people are getting emails that look like they're from their bank or the IRS or a text message or a phone message, do this, do that. So I'm not surprised that Medicare, a lot of these scams are going on. The old thing, if you're not sure, AARP, your website's a good place to go read that information or call someone. And before you call them and give out. And by the way, it's very rare. I'm going to point this out to your point, the Attorney General, Christina. It's very rare for someone legit to ask you for your full social. Usually it's the last four. Like if you call your bank and you want to check the balance on your credit card or a payment, you can go in automatically. They'll say, what's the last four of your account, last four of your social? Very rarely do they say, what's your complete full social security?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Good stuff. All right, Christina, make it a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Got some good news now. We always love to end our show on Fridays with some good news. Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Delta Dental Radio on the weekends on the Pulse of an H, and, of course, stories from the starting line.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to the commentary on the Masters. It is certainly a spectacle of a golf event. So, but I'm here to talk about all the other great news that's out there. First of all, me and many of our employees were on our soccer field on Monday night with my 5-year-old granddaughter with our special glasses looking at the eclipse. And while certainly it wasn't the totality, we had a wonderful time. And, you know, many of them commented that it was, given all the things that go on in the world, that it was just a positive camaraderie. So, mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool Tuesday. And then last night I was able to go to the Grapponi Conference Center for New Hampshire Business Review's 200 influential leaders, and there was a huge crowd of about 800 people. So people are definitely back into the human connection. And then this Saturday, we have a race down in Londonderry for Earth Day, and it's part of the Millennium Running Series. So that, for my running friends, that starts at 9 o'clock near the airport. And I just wanted to mention that I just finished up a Zoom call with a veteran affairs organization that's really helped me get the word out to our veterans. So more and more veterans are understanding that if they're not eligible for the VA or if they're not eligible for Medicaid, they can give me a call at 223-1300, and Dr. Mitch Caray and I will take care of you. And, you know, my board of directors has put together $300,000 to take care of our veterans.
And now in Maine and Vermont as well.
Exactly. And I credit you again because you pointed this out to me 8 or so years ago. And then once we started doing it successfully in New Hampshire, we're now doing it $300,000 worth in Maine. They also have a relatively high percentage of veterans. And then in Vermont as well at the $100,000 level. So the only thing I ask veterans is just, when you leave a message, just leave your phone number. And then this weekend, we have a very interesting show because Borja, who is the CEO of Waypoint, will be describing what it was like on the sleep out. And that of course, is the event which really sensitizes citizens to the plight of people that, don't have a home. And so he'll do a great job of explaining all the great services, you know, that Waypoint does. So that's this weekend. And the book, Stories from the Starting Line, with the new chapter, everybody's buying it again. So all those funds go to oral health for the veterans. So, Jack, that's my story, and I'm going to stick with it. How's that? Oh, one other thing. May I? Sunday. This my real job, Medicaid. We have a mobile dental clinic here at 2 Delta. If you're on Medicaid and you don't have a dental home, it'll be operational from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. right across the Discovery Center right here at 2 Delta. Now I'm done.
All right, Tom, I love it.
Thanks.
Tom, thank you. Bye-bye. Tom Raffio.